Hello and welcome to We Watch Movies, a podcast where we watch movies and talk about them. I am your host for this week and the next many weeks, Elijah, and I am here with Harry Potter newbie, Forrest. How are you doing today, Forrest?
I'm doing pretty well. I watched Harry Potter films for the first time this week, and
that must mean you're doing great.
Yes. Yeah, I was not expecting them to be as long as they were.
Yeah, they're pretty long. They're not Lord of the Rings long, but they're pretty long.
Yeah, they definitely are. But
anyway, today we are going over the first two Harry Potter movies, Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone and Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets. And then after that, we will be taking the official Wizarding World sorting hat house quiz, because Forrest needs to know what house he's in, no matter how much or how little he actually cares about that fact. So, what was that?
I was going to say, what is the hat?
The hat? It's a hat. You saw it.
Is that the only explanation?
It's the sorting hat. It was enchanted by Godric Gryffindor, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's to sort people into their houses.
Yes, it's the sorting hat. You saw the movie. It was pretty clear.
No, the question I'm asking is, why do they need to sort people into houses?
So that the students can be organized into, like, with their peers and have people to, I don't know, mingle with, have competition within the school with the house cup.
It's super fair. It's super fair. I'm, yeah, okay. I think I'm ready.
Also, Quidditch doesn't work without the houses.
No. That's a good point.
Yeah. Okay. You want to just start right away with the first one?
Yeah, a couple of things. First, we have an Instagram account. It is at We Watch Movies Podcast. And throw up a spoiler warning for Harry Potter.
Yes, I might say lots of random stuff. So, books and movie spoilers. Harry Potter is on the table. If you haven't seen it, what are you doing with your life?
Living it. I mean, very normal people don't watch Harry Potter. I'm just saying.
You texted me the other day and you were surprised just how many people actually know things about Harry Potter.
Yeah, and I was surprised how little I knew about Harry Potter. It was But then there were, as I was watching it, there were certain things that seemed very familiar to me for whatever reason, despite the fact I'd never seen any of the films, read any of the books, watched any of the trailers, any of that sort of thing. I had picked up some pieces of information along the way, which is bizarre.
That is weird. But you've been my friend for many years, so you've probably picked up stuff from my random quotes.
There we go.
Yeah. Anyway, first up, we have the 2001 release, Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, starring a lot of people, namely Daniel Radcliffe, Rupert Grint, Emma Watson, Robbie Coltrane, Richard Harris, Maggie Smith, Alan Rickman, so many other people. And it is the story of a boy who goes to a magic school when he finds out he's a wizard. And it's awesome.
First question, what is that boy's name?
Harry Potter. It's in the title, actually. Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. Fun fact, I had to tell you this. The British release was Harry Potter. Well, the international release, I believe, was Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone. And They didn't think that was intense enough for us Americans. So they made it the Sorcerer's Stone. Which is pretty stupid.
I was very confused at first.
Yeah.
It's like, which one am I supposed to be watching here?
Same deal with the books, by the way. Same deal with the books. Mm.
So why don't you start with telling us what you thought about the first film?
Well, I'll be blunt. It's hard for me to be super critical of these movies because I truly adore every single one, and I've seen every single one many dozens of times. But I think the first one is a brilliant, magical, just really fun kids' adventure that introduces this world really effectively with really amazing practical filmmaking, amazing, incredible sets, fantastic costume design, and just really strong performances from the veteran cast. And they support the young kids really well, who do a good job. They're not terrible kids performers. So it's hard for me to say anything I dislike, like I said, but it just is such a fun introduction to Harry Potter, the Sorcerer's Stone is, that is.
Right. So let me ask you, what is your earliest memory of watching this film?
This movie specifically? The first time
you watched it? Yeah.
I don't remember the first time I watched it, but I remember getting the DVD, the deluxe edition DVD for Christmas when I was maybe 7.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah. The earliest one I actually remember watching explicitly is the third one.
Okay.
Because we got it on Netflix when they mailed discs to you.
It's a long time ago.
A very long time ago.
And had you read any of the books prior
to that? Yes, I watched the movies because I loved the books. I read the first one in first grade. And okay. I don't remember. I'm assuming I just went through them as soon as possible after that. However much or little I actually understood, having a 6-year-old brain.
That's a pretty long book for a first grader.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It was a big jump from Hardy Boys to Harry Potter.
I can only imagine. All right. Well, I think I remember my first time watching it a little better, or at least I should.
Literally, all I know, and this is because I begged you to tell me anything, was that you, and I quote, liked it.
Yeah. That the first. Yeah. It was interesting because it was pretty much, if that makes any sense, in terms of the world that it established, there were certain things and how everything laid out that I didn't, obviously I didn't know the specific details of anything, but I was surprised with how familiar everything felt, just because how closely it aligned with some of my assumptions. And there were also things that I had picked up, minor details that I didn't remember that I knew. Like, for example, obviously everyone knew about, and so all those things coupled with I thought the film might be, it was a pleasant experience. It wasn't anything shocking. There was a point I mentioned to you in both films, actually, probably about halfway through, where I just had this realization where I wasn't quite sure what was going on. And I realized it's because they were throwing a lot of information at me.
Yeah.
But I think towards the end, they give you some satisfying resolve, so I didn't necessarily need all those questions answered, but the simple storyline was resolved, and yeah, that's a good thing. That benefits the film immensely. It also seemed like in the 2.5 hours that the film was running, was it just me, or were they really trying to cut down a lot of, did they cut out a lot of stuff that was in the book, because it seemed like they were trying to get through it, everything. Talk about everything they could, but they had a lot of ground to cover in 2.5 hours.
And here you've arrived at the main problem a lot of people have with the movies. They have 2.5 hours to cover, well, at least in these first two, 350 pages. And the first two, they do a really great job, since they're shorter books, of getting, I'd say, 85% of the book in there. Like, it's pretty impressive. They do a good job. As we go along, there are larger and larger discrepancies between the book material and the movie material. And that used to bother me a lot, but I've come to learn that creative license is a necessary thing, because books and movies are very different, and you cannot, it's impossible to have every single thing be put into a movie. And the screenwriters throughout the series did a great job of recognizing that and making entertaining movies that stand on their own, rather than just relying on the books for everything. And all the movies still follow the books. None of the plots are different or anything. But
gotcha.
Definitely, especially most people point to number 5 as the egregious one here, which as a movie is probably top 3 of the movies, but it's an 870 page book crammed into like 2 hours and 10 minutes.
Wow, 870 pages.
Yeah, for a while that was the longest book I'd ever read.
Wow, that's I wasn't expecting that. So one of the things that I'd noticed, but occurred to me, is there are 8 films in this franchise, and yes, there are other franchises that have 8+ films in them, but there aren't many franchises that have 8 films where they maintain the same core cast throughout.
Yeah, it's impressive. I'm sure there's more, but from what I can remember, I can immediately think of one supporting actor who was replaced. And a second. Oh, yeah. Richard Harris, who portrays Dumbledore in the first two movies, passed away before the third movie filmed.
Right, I knew that.
Yeah, so Michael Gambon takes over. And then the actor for Crabbe, one of Malfoy's goons, he left, I believe, and is replaced in the later movies.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's one of the random pieces of information I knew about the film, is that the actor who portrayed Dumbledore dies. And I'm a little disappointed after watching the first two films, because he's my favorite part about both films.
He's wonderful. Richard Harris Dumbledore is book Dumbledore incarnate. Michael Gambon's a little more off the cuff, but he's great.
Okay. So going back to the first book here, you know, I've told you that. Did I like it? I'm going to give you a little more detailed of an answer now.
Please do.
Yeah, I thought it was good. I don't think there's any denying that. I think it's a very solid story from beginning to end, with everything is satisfyingly resolved to some capacity. There was a lot of, certainly in this movie, a lot of little minutiae explaining the world, which can get, it's a critique I have for both films, easy for me to get lost a little bit in some of the lore that they're trying to, you know, throw at me the whole time. Yes, it's a good film, and I imagine that the whole franchise is going to be good. I don't think I would have been interested in it had I watched it as a child.
Okay. That's okay.
The world itself that they're establishing is not necessarily one I would have been excited about or like, oh, I really want to get into that. Like you watch something like Star Wars or even Lord of the Rings, and it's this escapism fantasy. And there's still, and maybe it's because I've watched it when I'm older, but there's still not that connection of, oh, this fantasy world is awesome. It'd be cool to live in it. And it just didn't have that for me.
You would rather go to Hogwarts than be in the Hunger Games, though, right?
Well, I mean, that's cheating.
Come on, give me this one.
Well, it depends which class of people am I in the Hunger Games.
You're literally the worst one. District 400 or whatever.
Well, that's the district I wanted to be in, so... Oh. I mean, yeah, if you were giving me those two choices, sure.
Questions about the movie. What were some parts that you liked?
Yeah, okay. I liked the intro. I liked the first 30 minutes from Harry Potter as a boy being dropped off at his family's house to Hagrid and rescuing him.
Yes.
I thought that was a very excellent introduction to the character. You see who he is, you see his potential, and some supernatural instance occurs that changes his life radically. It's a great setup. The little adventure down the magic street. I forget what the magic street is called.
Diagon Alley.
Yes, that place. I thought that was equally good. The verbal introduction of Voldemort, which, by the way, if we're not supposed to say his name, why does everyone say it so much?
They don't.
I mean, they were saying it quite a lot. I was like, I thought we were say his name.
I mean, Harry does a lot, and Dumbledore always does, and they're on screen a lot, so maybe that's it.
Don't care. Yeah, and then I thought that the finale was kind of interesting when they were going into that tunnel, the three of them, and they were going through the different obstacles to get to the Sorcerer's Stone.
Yeah, that's a fun sequence. I love the key room with the flying keys. I love the chess. The chess was always my favorite scene as a kid. It's awesome. You did text me while you were watching the movie and said, Snape definitely isn't the bad guy. So you were right about that. But I'm curious, at what point did you think that?
I actually was the bad guy.
You actually what?
At no point did I think he was the bad guy. I think they were throwing, smoke in my eyes. But I would say that Alan Rickman's performance was, along with Dumbledore's performance, he was my favorite of the franchise, or I mean, that film and the following one. And my question is, is he in every film? I know at one point Alan Rickman had passed away and I wasn't sure.
Yes, he's in all of them.
Okay.
And he is the best part of many of them.
Does he have larger roles in some of the later films?
Absolutely.
Sweet. Sweet. I look forward to it then.
Yeah, he's involved in 3, present in 4, 5 has a very large role, 6 has a very, very large role, 7 and 8 also. So yeah, once we hit 5, Snape is very there.
Sweet.
Yeah. Did you like Quidditch?
No.
Okay, you can leave.
And
now.
I'll tell you why. No, and I'll tell you why. And this could probably be in later films, this might change, but I thought both instances, certainly in the second film, they were thrown in there and didn't really contribute much to the film. I know I could imagine that if they were omitted from the films, people would have been very frustrated, but the inclusion of them and me watching them as someone who doesn't know the world at all, it felt like a sidetrack. And it was kind of like, all right, let's get back to the story here.
Okay. I guess from a filmmaking standpoint, I can see that. I think I view it as one of the few ways, excuse me, one of the few ways Harry can connect with his parents, his dad specifically, which is important because he has literally nothing other than that. And I think they're very well made, especially with the technology available in 2001. I think they look, they hold up pretty well, both of the two scenes there. I will say you don't get a full Quidditch match again until like movie 6, I think.
I gotcha.
You get 3 has like 2 minutes of one. 4 and 5, I don't think have them.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
I would definitely say that the match in the second film was far more egregious because it didn't contribute much of anything to the story, if I recall.
Yeah, it has the Malfoy rivalry in there, which is always a subplot throughout the series, but that's fair. Did on pure entertainment value, did you think Quidditch was cool? Can you tell how much I'm reaching for a positive answer here?
I'm not trying to be difficult. It just, there wasn't many elements of it that interested me. I will say once that seeker ball finally showed up and watching Harry go after it, I thought that was pretty exciting, but the rest of it was a bit dull.
Okay. That's the snitch.
Okay. Why is it called this? Why are there 3 balls? 4 balls? How many balls are there?
Well, I have a book called Quidditch Through the Ages if you want to read it.
No, thank you.
There's 4 balls, the Quaffle, which you score points with, kind of like you would soccer. And then you have the Bludgers, who go around smacking people off their brooms. And then you have the Snitch, and that's the game ender and likely the game winner. And the Snitch was originally, way back when, a bird, a small live bird that was released into the game. And
gotcha.
Yeah. For a while in Quidditch, there weren't snitches. It was just the Quaffle points, and it was introduced with the bird and a lot of gambling.
So how would the game end without the Snitch?
I think they had a time limit or something. I can't remember. I haven't read Quidditch Through the Ages in a while.
Okay, I was just wondering if there was a certain point limit they were trying to reach, or
it might have been,
if it was a time thing. Okay.
I do know Bludgers were originally called Blutters.
I can see why they may have changed that.
Yeah. Yeah. So Quidditch, I can see that being extraneous. One thing I wanted to ask you about is these early movies are examples of further examples of John Williams' legendary repertoire. What did you think of the score? Because I think they are phenomenal, particularly the main Hedwig's theme, the main theme, and the Christmas theme.
Yeah, no, I thought they were excellent. That I can see hearing that theme song as the film opens up. It feels like a very iconic moment. And I'm certain I've heard that before from somewhere, that main theme song.
Yeah.
But
it's hard to escape, honestly.
Yeah. No, I thought it was, obviously you said it was John Williams.
Yeah. He did the first three.
Yeah. So yeah, of course it's brilliant.
Yeah. These two were directed by Christopher Columbus. no relation to Mr. 1492, I believe. Funny enough, he also directed the disastrous Percy Jackson movie. I don't know if he did the second Percy Jackson movie. He did the first one and it was bad. So, one thing you'll notice is in these first two movies, everything probably felt very traditional, like very formal robes all the time, very little casual clothing. Everything was very fancy. You'll notice as the directors change, the style changes a lot. So with the third one, the characters wear normal, like shirts and pants more often. But what'd you think of that traditional kind of, what'd you think of the whole really aesthetic of the movie?
Right, the aesthetic of the movie. Well, I thought it was very well executed in everything. In terms of Hogwarts, the dress, the attire. I think that's part of the world that I thought was a bit bland and maybe would have not interested me so much in the world. But that said, it was all definitely well executed. It was all visually, nothing looked odd or obscure. It is presented well. It just wasn't super exciting, if that makes any sense.
No, I get that. The first two definitely have that look about them. And I can see it being not the most exciting thing in some cases. But it sounds to me like you certainly thought the first one was good, just had a little bit of a learning curve with the lore and some uninteresting parts that didn't add too much to the overall story for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd say that's about it.
Cool. You know what? I'll take it. I'm not upset. You at least enjoyed it. any standout performances other than Alan Rickman and Richard Harris? I love Maggie Smith as McGonagall, personally.
Well, I think it goes without saying that the whole cast is very good. I think Daniel Radcliffe and Rupert Grint.
Yep.
And Emma Watson.
Watson.
Had to make sure I got that one right. Those three are, I'll say it, phenomenal performances.
Yeah. They're great. I know, at least when they were cast, I don't know about filming, Emma Watson was 9.
Wow.
Which is pretty crazy. Yeah. I love that they did such a good job as kids, and I love that they stayed with the series to the end.
Yeah, it would have been hard if by book 6, Daniel Radcliffe decided he was done.
Emma Watson almost left after 5.
Oh, really?
Which would have been rough, but she stayed, so we're happy. Mm. Okay. What overall would you rate Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone? I'm not really going to rate these. In my mind, they're all 5 stars, and it's hard for me to look at them critically, as I've said 800 times. But what would you rate it for us as a newcomer, the first movie?
Yeah, so I've been saving this. I know that you checked Letterboxd and tried to cheat your way.
As soon as you said you finished it, I checked Letterboxd.
But I intentionally have not put it up there yet. I'm going to give this a 3 out of 5 stars.
Okay, cool.
I thought it was an excellent introduction to this world. I think everything was executed very well. The cast is brilliant. As I mentioned, certain critiques that I've mentioned before, there are parts that I don't find incredibly interesting. There are parts that they could have omitted, and such as the Quidditch and other aspects that I thought maybe they could have elaborated on that they glossed over. And the lore can bog you down a little bit, but ultimately it's a satisfying conclusion and it can be fun.
I'm glad you think so. Solid 3 out of 5. You liked it. Now let's go to the second one where we have it's called Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets. Basically the same cast with the addition of Kenneth Branagh as Gilderoy Lockhart, who is very special. and this is the second year at Hogwarts, Harry's magic school, and students start getting mysteriously, well, not students at first, things, and then students start getting petrified, and they're trying to figure out what's petrifying them while trying to avoid Gilderoy Lockhart, the new Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher. What did you think?
No, I thought this one was good as well. I didn't think it was quite as good as the first one. The ending, I thought, was derivative of the first.
How so?
Well, the fact that... Are we going to see a real Voldemort at some point?
I don't know.
No, because in the first film, we had that dark arts teacher, and he was being leeched off of by Voldemort, who was a dark spirit, and Harry defeats him in a chamber. And in this film, we have this guy who turns out to be he was Voldemort, right?
He was the memory of Voldemort. Voldemort, pre-Voldemort.
And so a proto-Voldemort in a chamber again. So I thought that, at least for me, it kind of ended the same way as the last one. And then we had this, you know, we went from that to having this nice tender moment between Harry and Dumbledore. So it kind of, they kind of had the same rhythmic beats. It's not to say it's necessarily bad, but they certainly reminded me of one another.
That is kind of funny. I've never thought about that.
It's like, oh, we're doing the same thing again.
Well, this one, Forrest, this one had a big snake.
Oh.
And okay. A sword, which was cool.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, that's fair. I'll get back to the ending. Let me rewind a bit. The introduction, the first 20 minutes, I thought was great. It was funny seeing Dobby. At Harry's house, and him—he's
the best.
Smashing his head against the bookshelf there. I was thinking about giving this
bad.
Thinking about giving this film a half star more because of Dobby's inclusion, but he ended up not being in the film as much as I would have liked. So we will see how much more he's in the later films. Also a little confused why they sent Harry back to his terrible family. I know they're his family, but there are, child protection laws out there. So,
yeah, I can't remember if they explain it in the movies. There is an explanation in the books, though. And if we get to the point in the movies where it does happen, where it would have been explained and they don't explain it, I will then explain it to you.
Okay, fine. Make this, me wait.
Yes, this would happen in movie 6 if it were to happen.
Oh, wow.
I think it's 6.
I gotta wait that long?
Yeah. You do.
Also, another question concerning... I guess it's called Wizarding World and the normal world. Are they the same world?
Yeah.
Okay.
You're not going into some alternate dimension or anything.
Okay. Because I was a little confused, because obviously when they want to get to the Hogwarts train station, they have to go through the wall. And when they want to go to that alleyway, they have to go by some magical means. So I was just a little confused how that all functioned.
Yeah, it's just things are hidden by magic. I know Hogwarts has many, many spells around it that, like, whenever a muggle gets near it, they remember something that they had to do and just leave. So things like that are hiding and protecting all the magical sites.
Okay, so that said, I was a little confused. Why don't the wizards know about muggles or understand them? I think because I asked that question because Harry, at one point in the film, says to Ron that he doesn't think, or I think he says something effective, I'm not sure if you're aware, but muggles aren't used to flying cars.
Yeah. The wizards, they just don't interact with muggles because they fear, like, I mean, there's a lot of reasons. They've been separate for a long time. They are afraid that muggles would fear them or whatever. Thematically, it's touched on in the later movies, I believe, at least in the books it is. But like, it's not like they're completely separate, because there are muggle people who marry wizards and witches. And that's where we get half-bloods, like most of the world, wizarding world, or muggle-borns like Hermione, who were born from muggle parents. So yeah, they're not completely separate by any means, but they certainly don't interact much at all.
I gotcha, that's fair. Now, as for the story, like I said, I thought it was good. The addition of Kenneth Branagh's character, I thought, okay, I'll frame it this way. Story-wise, it didn't seem like he added anything and his role could have been omitted, but I thought that humor-wise and charm-wise, he added a lot to the story, and it was a lot of fun seeing him.
And Lockhart's a blast.
And that's not a role I've ever seen Kenneth Branagh in. So he typically plays more serious characters.
Yeah,
at least from what I've seen.
Oh, for sure. He's amazing as Gilderoy Lockhart. Yeah. I love him so much. The scene in the Defense Against the Dark Arts classroom with the Cornish pixies is really fun. I like that we get to peek into the classes more. We get the herbology class with the mandrakes, which do come into effect later because they're the cure for petrification. And the dueling club is one of my favorite scenes because Snape is amazing.
I would say that's my favorite scene was Snape versus Lockhart. Is that?
Yes.
Is that his name?
Gilderoy Lockhart.
I'll just stick with Lockhart. Yeah, Snape versus Lockhart. I thought was great. And it kind of occurred to me it was is that the first instance where you have going against a wizard with the magic wands?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Okay. Yeah, that was pretty cool. And pretty exciting, I'd say. That would probably be my favorite part of the whole film.
It's definitely a good one. And we get the parcel tongue after that, and we start to explore Harry's connection to quote-unquote the dark side with his parcel tongue and his the sorting hat initially wanting him in Slytherin. It makes him a lot more interesting, I think, to have these connections to who he doesn't want to be and the fear that gives him.
Right. Yeah, I will say this film bogged me down a lot more in some of its lore, certainly in that midsection of the film. So there were some things that I didn't pick up on. And I think the biggest thing is, and maybe you can explain this to me, is I'm not quite sure I understood exactly what the Chamber of Secrets was. Was it a prison? Was it a chamber to simply put, keep secrets away that people weren't supposed to know? I wasn't quite sure.
You ready for a history lesson? So do you remember that there were four founders to Hogwarts? Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Oh, here's your house explanation too. The four founders all had different ideas about what they wanted to do with the school. Salazar Slytherin, the founder of Slytherin House, he wanted to be very selective with who they let in. He just wanted purebloods. So any wizards or witches who were muggle-born or had like one muggle parent or whatever, he didn't want to allow them in. The other three didn't agree and they kicked him out. But before he left, he created the Chamber of Secrets with the Basilisk so that one day his true heir could return and purge the school of all quote unquote dirty blooded magic people.
Okay. I gotcha. And two questions. First, Chamber of Secrets then being the secret of what? What exactly?
I think it's just...
I'm not trying to be difficult. I'm just...
No, I think it's just a cool name.
I got you. Chamber of Secrets.
It's cool.
Okay, so, but he created that chamber to... He created the chamber to... house I'm sorry, you'll have to repeat yourself at least that last part about exactly what the chamber is, because it's kind of going over my head.
So he created the chamber to house the basilisk, which is the big snake.
Okay
He created it to house that so that one day his true heir and he would know that the heir would be able to speak Parseltongue, because Slytherin could.
Gotcha.
And the true heir could release and control the snake in order to purge the school of non-purebloods.
I gotcha. Okay. No, that makes sense. Okay. So Slytherin created the chamber to house the snake, and so that his heir could return and speak to the snake, to use the snake, the basilisk, to wipe out the impure blood.
Correct.
Okay.
And that adds conflict, so, because Harry Harry can speak Parseltongue, which makes him think he's the heir of Slytherin, which leads to the conflict of him thinking he's bad and all that.
I gotcha. Yeah, that's a very common trope. So, and then it turns out Voldemort, or pre-Voldemort, was the heir, and he went down there and he was the one that opened it up and left some sort of magical book that would have left some his presence in there. Is that what that was?
You're doing great. You're doing so well. I'm proud of you.
And what was the purpose of him doing that?
Yeah. So
instead of just
50 years prior to the Chamber of Secrets movie, Tom Riddle, who was Voldemort, or would become Voldemort, opened the chamber and started doing his business and killed Moaning Myrtle in the bathroom with the basilisk.
Oh, I did not pick up on that.
Yeah, I think I'm 90% sure that's mentioned. I'm sure it's easy to miss. Then, once Myrtle was killed, everyone was sent home, I believe, or something, and he was forced to close the chamber because suspicions were rising. He blamed it on Hagrid. If you remember the flashback in the memory, he blamed it on Hagrid and got Hagrid expelled.
Right.
Then he stored his... This is towing the line with spoilers for future movies and books, but he left his memory, we'll call it that, in the diary, and then with the plan of using the diary to manipulate a future student to continue his work and eventually return him to power.
Gotcha. And where did he leave the diary? It suggests at the end of the film that Malfoy's father had the diary and he put it in Ron's younger sister's satchel or something.
Yeah.
Right.
That is correct. And I don't want to say why, because that would reveal something that is yet to be revealed.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. Okay, I think I have a general, just an understanding here.
That's good. That's good.
And I'm pretty sure at some point Ralph Fiennes is going to show up. So,
yes, he does show up eventually. He's part of the series.
They're not just going to keep hinting at Voldemort and him not show up.
There's only one movie where Voldemort does not appear in any form.
Which one is that?
The third one.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay.
The third one is also maybe the best movie, maybe.
So of these film titles, the only one that I was familiar with was The Prisoner of Azkaban.
Yeah.
So, and that's the third one. So I'm kind of excited about that one because I've third seen one. That one on TV so many. I mean, I've seen it listed playing on TV so many times, especially around Christmas time. And I've never actually seen it, so I'm kind of excited to watch that one.
The third one, many people consider it objectively, like from a filmmaking standpoint, the best of them. It's directed by Alfonso Cuarón, who is very talented. He did Gravity, Children of Men, Roma most recently. But yeah, the third one is excellent. It finally, we're getting a little darker. We're shifting away from the more traditional aesthetic. The story's getting more interesting and complex. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah. I will say one of my largest critiques is that Hermione's role in the film is minimized.
Yeah.
And I'm not quite sure why. I know it gives it that emotional beat, but it would have been fun to see her more involved.
Yeah. Yeah. You definitely miss Hermione in this one. You get plenty of Hermione in the next one, though, I promise.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure. Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to the next one. That'll be fun. And you've promised me that we move away from some of the kid-centric fun and into some more serious stuff.
More serious, much more intense as well.
Good.
I think this could have been... The 1 through 3 and then 6 for some reason are PG. All the others are PG-13. I think 3 could make an argument for PG-13 and 6 should for sure be PG-13. I have no idea why it's not. But yeah, we're getting darker.
So one thing that was a major confusion for me.
Yeah, go ahead.
One thing that was a major confusion for me is that, and I understand the reason why, is that they aged 2 years over the course of one summer.
That's called real life.
The actors themselves aged, yeah, I was saying the actors themselves aged 2 years over one summer, and I understand why they did that. One of my earliest memories of hearing about the Harry Potter films was off the cuff of someone talking about how it takes longer for the films to be made than, you know, you can't get them as close chronologically together without some disparity in age.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that threw me off though, because I wasn't quite sure how long had passed between the films until I think a little later when they mentioned year.
Yeah, yeah. Each movie is a year after the previous. It's like, it's like a school year, basically.
Does it also serve as a college?
There's no wizard college. You're at Hogwarts from the age of 11 through 17, and then you take your newts, the nastily exhausting wizarding tests, and you get a job.
Another thing that was very unclear to me is, in the first film, I did not realize that Ron had any siblings, and so for the first 5-10 minutes of Ron's introduction, I was very confused with who all these people were.
You didn't know Ron had siblings in the first movie?
Nope, not at all.
Did you watch the platform 9 3/4 scene? All the Weasleys go through.
Okay, yeah, I realized that in retrospect, but I thought the mother was a teacher and she was just escorting students to the platform.
No, that's the Weasley mom, Mrs. Yeah. Weasley.
That makes sense. But I was very confused.
I'm gonna be honest, I'm gonna pin that one on you.
I'm just saying. It was very confusing to me.
Fair enough. But
that's a very minor thing.
Yeah. So what would you rate Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets?
I'm going to give this one a 2.5 stars. I don't think it was quite as good as the first. Again, I thought that the ending was derivative of the first film, and yeah, there wasn't, it got caught in its own minutia a little bit in the middle of the film. Seeing Hermione go down halfway through was disappointing, but still, it's a good film. I liked it.
Cool. Glad you did.
And this would be a 5-star for you.
Yep. That's all going to be 5 stars. Checked, letterboxed. They're all 5. Okay, now what we're going to do is have some fun.
Yay!
As I'm sure you care deeply about what house you're in. So, we both have the official Wizarding World sorting quiz pulled up. And are you ready to begin? Find out your destiny?
Ready as I'll ever be.
Okay,
let's go. What's your prediction of the house I will end up in?
Oh,
you said the other week, Hufflepuff. Is that
everything right? You say about Harry Potter ends in a question mark because you're not quite sure yet. But yes, Hufflepuff is. Yeah, I would predict Hufflepuff first, and if not Hufflepuff, Gryffindor.
Okay, that's. Which house are you in?
What house am I in?
Yes.
I'm in Ravenclaw, I assume. That's what I was when I took it before, and I'm going to take it again with you.
Okay. All right.
So Should I
begin?
Yep, let's click it.
Clicking.
Okay. Start the sorting ceremony. You see that one?
No, I'm loading. I have slow internet.
Oh, right.
Jumped a little bit ahead of me.
My bad.
Here we go. Starting the sorting ceremony now.
Let's do it.
Okay.
Okay. Choose one to continue. Dawn or dusk?
River or forest? I mean, that one's pretty easy.
I'm going to go dusk for mine. I'm assuming you're picking river.
Yes, because I'm a big fan of River Phoenix.
Yes. Okay. What is your second question?
4 boxes are placed before you. Which would you try and open? The gleaming jet black box with a silver lock and key marked with a mysterious rune that you know to be the mark of Merlin. Okay, so Merlin's a thing.
Yeah.
A small pewter box, unassuming and plain, with a scratched message upon it that reads, "I only open for the worthy."
Ooh, are you worthy?
Who knows? A small tortoiseshell box embellished with gold inside some small creature seems to be squeaking.
Or
an ornate gold casket standing on clawed feet whose inscription warns that both secret and knowledge and unbearable temptation lie within. Well, not that one.
My question, while you think, is if you were attending Hogwarts, which pet would you take? Owl, cat, or toad? And the answer is owl. It's always owl.
I was going to say cat. I'm a big fan.
Really? You'd take a cat over an owl?
I mean, yeah, you can't do much with an owl.
Dude, it's literally the mail system.
And so exactly, why do I need a personal owl? Come on.
Which box did you pick?
I'm trying to decide here.
This is hugely important.
I don't think I'm worthy because I mean it's very nondescript when it says worthy. I don't think I want to open the box with unbearable temptation lying within. That just seems like a bad idea.
Embellished, agreed.
Embellished with gold inside some small creature seems to be squeaking. That is usually always a bad idea.
Okay, so process of elimination.
I would probably go with the silver, the jet black box because it seems like a good idea.
There you go. See? Okay, my next question is, which road tempts you the most? The twisting, leaf-strewn path through the woods? The wide, sunny, grassy lane? The narrow, dark, lantern-lit alley? Or the cobbled street lined with ancient buildings? Ooh, that's tough. Mm-hmm. I like the cobbled street, but I also like the forest path. What are you thinking about right now?
The question is, if you could have any power, which would you choose?
Ooh.
First is the power to read minds. That's off the table. The power to change the past. Well, that is incredibly tempting. The power of invisibility. I mean, that's a little weak compared to the last one. The power to speak to animals. Why? The power of supreme and strength. Okay, that one's good. The power to change your appearance at will. Ooh. A little mystique action.
Yeah, yeah. I think I am going to go with the cobbled street lined with ancient buildings.
Interesting, interesting.
I like that. Oh, I just got the boxers question. But I'll wait on that until you decide your superpower.
Well, if I had the power to speak to animals, I could speak to my cat.
You could. You also could speak to the animal that was in the box you didn't choose.
But if I had the power to change the past, I could go back in time and practice more basketball.
It'd be more than a bench warmer for the prep team. I'm sorry if I hurt you.
It's a sensitive topic. Okay, and the other one I'm considering is the power of superhuman strength. Well, if I had superhuman strength, I could play any sport I wanted.
True. You could also break things.
I think if I had the ability to go change the past, I would approach life far too callously and not take anything seriously. The ability to change your appearance at will, that seems very deceptive. And while it would be very effective in certain areas, I think the most beneficial power is probably superhuman strength.
Nice.
There we go.
Nice. I now have the four boxes in front of me.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah, it seems to be the same boxes. And I don't know. I'm not doing the secret knowledge and unbearable temptation one. That's out of the question. The small creature, you see, you thought of it as a threat. I think it could need help. So I might go for that one. The black box with the mark of Merlin is super interesting, though. And it's the only one with a lock, which makes it seem secretive, and I like that. Mm. I'm going with that one. What have you got?
Late at night, walking alone down the street, you hear a peculiar cry that you believe to be a magical source. Do you draw your wand and stand your ground? Withdraw into the shadows to await developments while mentally reviewing the most appropriate defensive and offensive spells should trouble occur? Or should you draw your wand and try to discover the source of the noise? Or proceed with caution, keeping one hand at your concealed wand and an eye out for any disturbance? Definitely that last one.
Yeah, just play it on the down low.
Yep.
Cool.
Because there's not necessarily any cause for alarm quite yet, but you do want to be ready, just in case.
Gotcha. My next question is, what are you looking forward to learning most at Hogwarts? So I can learn about magical creatures and how to befriend / take care of them. Flying on a broomstick. Apparition and disapparition. Oh, you haven't learned about apparition yet.
No.
That's basically the ability to teleport. Secrets about the castle. Transfiguration. Hexes and jinxes. Or every area of magic I can.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Are they going to be learning like real subjects like arithmetic or anything like that?
You don't think transfiguration is a real subject?
I don't know.
There are different needs. There was a whole scene in the second movie of transfiguration class with Ron failing to turn his mouse into a goblet because his wand is broken.
Oh, right. I forgot about that.
Would I prefer to fly on a broomstick or do hexes and jinxes? Because one is fun for battling, but one is sports, and I like sports. I want to freaking fly, dude.
You do like sports. You're a sporty guy.
I am. What's your question?
Well, why don't we go back to your question real quick?
Okay. I already chose.
Oh. My internet is slow.
Oh, my apologies. I chose flying on a broomstick. Second would have been hexes and jinxes to screw with people, but I'm much more mischievous in my brain than I am in real life.
Yeah, you're not mischievous.
Yeah. Come on, internet. I'm rooting for you.
Well, the question is, which of the following do you find most difficult to deal with? But the thing I find most difficult to deal with is the fact that the pictures aren't loading.
Oh, no.
This is potentially disastrous. What is your next question here?
Okay. A troll has gone berserk in the headmaster's study at Hogwarts. It is about to smash, crush, and tear several irreplaceable items and treasures. In which order would you rescue these objects from the troll, if you could? A nearly perfected cure for dragon pox. So that's that could save a lot of people from a presumably deadly disease. Student record
thing to do.
Student records going back 1,000 years. That's pretty unimportant in the face of dragonpox. A mysterious handwritten book full of strange runes. That's very intriguing. But I gotta save the cure first, right?
Well, what is the cure in? Well, what's happening in this? Oh, that's a there's a troll, not a fire. Never mind.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely going.
I mean, I think the first one is pretty. I mean, it's pretty open and shut.
Yeah, yeah. I went dragonpox cure, interesting book, student records. You don't need those.
Right. Okay. So, Elijah.
Yeah, yeah.
Between 1 and 5, which one, what number suits you best? 1 through 5?
I'd say 4 suits me best.
4. That is the empty square I am going with.
Cool.
Select. Here we go. If you were attending Hogwarts, which pet would you choose to take with you? Awesome. Cats.
Which of the following would you most hate people to call you? Oh, that's interesting.
I know.
What?
Eli.
Oh, that's not wrong. Ignorant, selfish, ordinary, or cowardly? No one's calling me ignorant. Only I call myself ignorant. What's your question?
You were attending Hogwarts. Which pet would you choose to take with you? And I chose cat. And now it's giving options of different color cats. Ginger cat, white cat, Siamese cat, tabby cat, black cat. I'm going to go tabby cat.
Nice. What are you at now?
Given the choice, I am at, given the choice, would you rather invent a potion that would guarantee you glory, love, power, wisdom? Definitely wisdom. That's an open shut case.
My question is heads or tails?
Oh, this one seems like that's the one I'm going. I've got here. I always go heads.
Heads always wins. I am with you.
Thank you.
Okay, the sorting hat is ready to make its decision.
Okay, are you nervous?
A little bit. Like, I've been a Ravenclaw. I'm curious if it's changed, but do you want to do this one at a time or together?
I think one of us should go first.
Okay, I'll go first. Here we go. Continue.
Okay, I'll wait.
I'm a Ravenclaw.
Awesome.
You probably know that some of Ravenclaw's most renowned members include Gilderoy Lockhart and Luna Lovegood. Luna Lovegood's my favorite character, by the way. You haven't met her. But did you know Ravenclaw's...
Okay,
I'm not going to read more because there's minor spoilers.
Oh, great. Awesome. All right. You ready for me to find out what I am?
Yes. Do it.
Here we go. And it's loading. And I am Ravenclaw.
Really?
Yes, I have wit, learning, and wisdom.
Nice.
I'm a little disappointed. It feels like second best.
What do you mean? Ravenclaws are the best. We s'more.
There's a reason Gryffindor is the house that is focused on constantly.
Because you need Gryffindors to kill Voldemort.
Yeah, it's the fun stuff.
Well, you're a Ravenclaw. Sorry you're disappointed.
I mean, it could be worse.
It could. You could be a Slytherin.
Or a Hufflepuff?
You know, Hufflepuffs aren't bad.
I think you called them the meme house.
I mean, they are memed the most.
That's fair.
You want to be a meme?
No. No, people tell me that too often.
Oof. Okie dokie. Well, that will conclude our journey to find out which house we're in. There are other tests we can take if you ever want to, but I don't feel like you will.
Sweet.
So this next week is going to be a mini cast. We'll talk about something. Don't know what yet.
Yes.
And it's a thing. It's a thing. After that, we will be doing Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban and Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire. And hopefully Forrest likes those as well. Any final comments on our intro to Harry Potter?
No, I think that's about it.
Cool. I appreciate you for
I appreciate you too.
Getting through it, even if it's not your favorite. You don't hate it, and that's a victory in my book.
Yeah.
So, as always, he has been Forrest. I have been Elijah. You all have been beautiful. And this has been We Watch Movies. We'll see you next time.
Save me.